Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. I want to welcome you both to the Vietnamese podcast. We've been coordinating this for a long time. I have Han and Holden Nguyen. They are both contestants from season 37, which is 2025's Amazing Race. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin, for having us. This has been in the works, so I'm stoked.
I'm so happy that you're stoked, because I am too. This is going to be interesting. What inspired you both to sign up to this race?
At least for me, it's like a three-part thing. Close scope, mid scope, and then like long-term type thing. It started probably December of 2023. I wasn't doing very well academically. I was kind of just burnt out. I was just super tired of school.
In high school or you were college already?
This was in college. I was just really burnt out of school and I didn't really want to do it at that point. I just wasn't doing well academically. So I had a couple friends who had taken breaks. And instead of studying for my final, I instead decided to binge two seasons of The Amazing Race, which was something I hadn't watched since I was like 13 or 14. And I was like, wow, this would be really fun. And I ended up not doing well on that final at all, but I ended up going home and telling Han, like, hey, we used to watch the show as kids. I think it'd be really, really fun if we did. I think we should apply. We should just figure it out. I think we'd have a great time. But I think, like, as a kid, I'd always wanted to do it. Like, the mid-scope thing was, like, who doesn't want to travel the world and who doesn't want to compete? I think competition is probably, like, the best thing ever. And I also think that seeing the world in the way that, like, the show presents it is so cool. Like, you will never, ever, 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 ever. Like, I was talking to another contestant. Like, they're like, you'll never have some multi-billion dollar company rent out a space for you to do some culturally significant activity.
Yeah.
Just so that people can watch you do that culturally significant activity. And I think that's really cool.
Okay. Before you go further, I want to like pinpoint this very unique perspective that you have. Who do you think inspired you to think that way? Because it's a pretty unique, I think, for somebody to go, I could do that. I want to be a part of that very cool thing. And we don't, you know, we're all like 9-to-5 people, whatever, and we're just living our lives. But then, and you were going to school at Stanford, I believe, right?
Yeah, I was at Stanford at the time, yeah.
Yeah, like, where did you get that idea? Where did you get that sort of way of thinking? And I talk about that because...
I kind of always had that in a sense. Like, I just remember as a kid, like, feeling very, very strongly about things happening in my life. Like, I, like, felt very strongly that, like, one day I was going to go to Stanford. And then, like, it happened, you know? Like, I felt very strongly about, like, even, like, military school. Like, I remember as a kid, my parents were threatening me with military school because I went to military school. And, like, I just felt in my heart of hearts that, like, I was going to end up at military school. And so, like, all these things kind of happened. And, like, I don't know. The best way to, like, kind of summarize it is, like, there's this Mark Cuban quote where he's, like, the luckiest guy out there is somewhere and it's got to be somebody. So why isn't it me? And I kind of feel the same way. Like, someone has to do it. And so, like, why wouldn't it be me? And I kind of feel like that has, like, low-key, like, really guided my life. Like, someone's got to be on season 37 of The Amazing Race based off of, like, their push for diversity in their casts. Someone's got to be Asian on that cast. Like, why can't it be me?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, really, yeah, like, that, Like, I've never thought about, like, what happens if it doesn't happen. I've kind of just thought of, like, okay, let's try it. And then if it does happen, like, okay, then it was meant to be.
That's a cool perspective. I love it. And that's inspiring for audience members to hear something like that. You know, somebody's got to be feeling that thing. That's going to be me. And that kind of, like, push forward, I think, in life and your mental state. It's pretty cool to hear that. So thanks for sharing it. And let's move back to the mid-scope that you're just about to get into.
Yeah, so that mid-scope was just, like, traveling the world and, like, getting this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Can you hear that ding if it's in my... Sorry, I'm gonna close out of that real quick.
No, okay.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No.
And then I think long-term scope, like... I don't know. I like grew up and like I watching The Amazing Race, like, is one of the only shows with like Asian participants in it. And I don't know. I think as a kid, like, you don't really conceptualize what you see on TV. You kind of just are like, oh, that's just what it is. Like, that's just what the characters look like. But then like having the opportunity to like make a character that like some Asian kid gets to see.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. And I think that was really, really fun. And I think that's like an unintended consequence that like, you know, you're not super conscious of, but like, I wasn't super conscious of, but it was something that like you do think about a little bit. Like, I was having this conversation with my friend and we were like, she was asking like me, like, when you do something or like think about your future, do you think about how it represents like Asian people as a whole or like Vietnamese people as a whole? And I think that's definitely true. And so like, I think that like there was just like some like small inherent part that I was representing Asian people, but like, I don't know, to do pretty well on the show at 21 and like knowing I was representing Asian people was like pretty cool. It was actually really cool.
So when do you let Han know about your idea and how does this like unfurl? How does it open up?
Oh, I fail the midterm. I fail that final. I get home for winter break. I pitch her the idea. She watches The Amazing Race herself. And then she has a flight booked to Sri Lanka. And then 3 days before she left for Sri Lanka, we put together our audition video and we made it work.
Wow.
So it was a really tight turnaround. And that was about a week before the submission deadline was due.
Wow. Han, what was your thoughts when your brother first came to you?
Just like a little bit of context. I was on already like a 6 month career break. I was just feeling burnt out, directionless. And I think something that's important to me, and I think something that honestly, our parents did instill in us, probably not in the way that they wanted to, but just like living life with intention and like creating the lives that we want to live.
You said they did not instill that in you?
I feel like they instilled it in us.
Oh.
But like their definition of intention, for example, would be like get that comfortable job, like build that family, don't stray off of like the beaten path. And like, that's intentional for them. But like, I think just the way Holden and I grew up and just the way our brains are wired, that looks very different to us. I feel like we like to live lives that we're passionate about. And so that being said, like, yeah, I decided to leave my job after 2 years. I graduated college, worked for 2 years, and then I left. And I decided to just travel and figure out what was out there. And I didn't know what I was looking for at the time. But I was really just on a journey of mindfulness and personal exploration. And I ended up coming back for Christmas because Christmas is very important to our family. And at that point, I'd been traveling for probably around 6 months. And so Holden pitched me this idea while we were both home. And my first thought was, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you grow up and you have these childhood dreams and like there's some dreams that you kind of let go of, you kind of hold on to, you know. And I feel like this was one of those dreams that I kind of had just like let go of. And I was like, okay, it'd be cool if we did it, but like not super attached to the idea. And I guess I did watch some Amazing Race, but like when Holden pitched me the idea, I was thinking like, you know what? Like, why not just try? Like, did I have faith that we could win $1 million? But I felt like part of the journey that I was on was just like I also realized the value of spending time with my loved ones, and Holden and I hadn't spent like 4+ years together. Like our relationship was straight up just when I was home, Holden would do something that would piss me off. Yeah. And so Holden and I, you know, we would get into an argument when I was home, and we wouldn't resolve it. The way we would resolve our arguments was like, I would just fly back to the East Coast, which is where I went to school. Holden would fly back down south to military school, and then we would meet up again the next year. And so I feel like, I don't know, family is something that's really important to us. And I don't know, I'll always have Holden's back no matter what. I think that's just the way we were raised. But like, I knew and I felt like there's so much growing to do, like on our end, in terms of like being able to work together. And I felt like this was just a fantastic opportunity. And just seeing how much it also meant to Holden was something else that like also, I don't know, convinced me and pushed me over the edge to submit that audition video. And it just happened to work out. So I'm just thankful for that.
I'm going to make a random question tangent here. Are your parents pushing at all times unconditional love and bonding between the two of you? Or are they not really focused on any of that? And just like, whenever you guys fight, they're just like, do whatever you want.
That's a complicated question. I feel like the mindset they have, and I don't think it's a bad one, but like they kind of see it as our problem. You know, like if we're fighting, it's our problem to solve. And there's only so much they can do to intervene to fix it. And like, they don't like seeing us fight. You know, they would prefer that we get along together. But I think that's kind of how they see it. And there's no push to be like, you should fix this. I think we just know that there's hope on their end that we will.
I ask that because from my perspective of coming from old school Vietnamese parents to younger parents like yours and younger children and second, third generation, like in the future, my parents and I, when I teach my children, and this is like very Vietnamese to America, you know, the difference. I said to my kids, they're 8 and 6 now. I said, your biggest failure in life to me is if you guys don't get along. That's my biggest, I don't care where you go to school. I don't care how much money you make. But if you two end up not talking, then this whole experiment about leaving Vietnam and leaving communism, whatever, and you two are not talking to each other, it's the biggest failure of the entire Vietnamese culture, is that you two are not talking. And that's like, for me, I hold that so sacred. So when you two reached out to me, this was definitely one of the points that I wanted to like ask you about, because you had to work together and I've seen your dynamic, you know, like on these pre-interview calls. And for me, I don't take any excuse for not getting along. It's like one of those things where, so it's very personal talking to both of you for me, because I demand that for my children. And the part reason why I do talk about it and force this upon them is because if you can't have each other's back as blood, as siblings, then where are you going to be rooted in 20, 30 years with the outside world, your spouse, your own children? It'll be easier for you to cut relationships off. Like, you know, white people, they do it. They just cut it off and it's like not a big deal. And that's my sort of like paradigm shift reverse when it comes to the new generation of Vietnamese people.
So you feel like the new generation of Vietnamese people, like, doesn't have that family condition blood?
No, we don't.
Interesting.
We don't, because it's not programmed from our parents' mouth. It's not like saying, on my dying day, like, mom, my dying day, if you guys are gonna move into the trajectory of never talking to each other because you're so different, then I failed as a father. I failed as a Vietnamese father to instill this idea. This is something that we bring from the old country, and a lot of old countries like Mexico or all these, you know, old country traditions bring this idea of family unconditional bonds. And I don't think that we as new Americans are bringing that strong enough into our relationships. And I do that with my brother. You know, I was born in the United States, and my brother and I, we grew up like fisticuffs, like we were like throwing down physically. And then as I got older, I was like, wait a minute, if he and I are not talking or we're fighting, we are failures to me. That's just in my mind, as a Vietnamese, person. And I think that's a very easy thing to do. If you say, I'm the younger one, unconditionally, I will back you up. And if you're wrong or if I'm wrong, I would just do my best to communicate a little bit. And then at the end of the day, I would just step back with my brother. I just pull back and I let him be right. And I let him be the leader because he's a year older than me. And that's how we do it in the Vietnamese tradition. And if it blocks my life, then I'll let him know. But if it doesn't block my life and it's just like words, I'll let it go. Yeah. But anyway, I'm not telling you guys how to live. I just, you know, I'm just telling you how I have been going through the world in the last 10, 15 years as a result of studying Vietnamese culture and seeing, like, when I go back to Vietnam, I see that it's beautiful to see the way that this is stacked up in Vietnamese culture.
And I feel like something is just that even when you watch the show, I don't think justice is the right word, but like, I think Holden and I, we both have very strong personalities, and like, this is just what's going to happen. And I think like, it's a beautiful thing that we both have strong personalities.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why we were so successful in the show was because like, we are fighters and we did not give up. And I think that like, there were so many arguments that we had that were honestly kind of not dirty, but like really got into the thick of it. And I think like there's a beautiful thing knowing that like, I knew Holden would never give up on me. And I knew that he would never give up. Like I knew that I would never give up on Holden and Holden would never give up on me just because of like, that is how we were raised. But I think also something that's like, interesting that you bring up is like we grew up in a very white neighborhood, and so like we're like in this in-between phase where like, you know, at home we have like this instilled in us like, you know, blood above all else, but then like, you know, we have white friends where that's just like not necessarily the case. And so like, especially since leaving for college and coming back, like noticing in particular like my dad, like when there's Vietnamese people in a crowd, like he always notices, like he always will pick it out and will make an effort to like, you know, talk to his brother, talk to his sister and stuff like that. And like, I feel like that's something that like, I think that we still hold close to our heart, that like for myself trying to navigate and like have that as a part of my life in terms of like, okay, like, yes, I'm second gen. Yes, family is super important to me. But like, I guess like, where do I fit into this big puzzle? Because like, innately, I don't look out for listening to Vietnamese in the streets mm-hmm. and like saying hi to my brother and my sister. And I'm like, is that the standard? I have no idea. But on the other hand, I'm not like going to ignore them. But I don't know, Holden, do you have thoughts on that?
I don't know if I've like fully agree with Han on this. I don't know. I kind of like, maybe it's because I got the upbringing in a different way, or like, I don't know. I think I see the value in both cultures in the way I was raised. I think that in America, the emphasis of individualism is like probably the most powerful thing. It's like what has made America, America. And the emphasis on the individual. However, I also think that like maybe doing military school or being raised by like Vietnamese parents, you learn a lot about what the importance of the institution is and like what is the sacrifice of the individual with respect to the institution. How much Beautiful. Does the individual actually yeah. matter to the institution? To me, I don't know. I feel like I respect myself as an individual and will kind of do what I want when it comes to my own life. That's like the whole like Mark Cuban tangent from earlier, right? But like, I think in terms of like, maybe I learned this from military school. My parents always emphasized filial piety. But I think that like, in order for anything to work, there has to be inherent sacrifice. Like, ain't nothing free, you know? Even if it doesn't cost money, it costs you something. And I think that, like, because of that, I don't know. I think that that's what I learned a lot from Vietnamese culture is like there are things that are bigger than yourself. So, like, sit down and shut the fuck up. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the F word on this podcast.
Yes, of course.
And I think it's, like, the same thing in terms of, like, Maybe I'm not nearly as I think my dad is like bonded to other Vietnamese immigrants who came to America. Cause I think that in like that experience is so unique. But I do definitely am cognizant of like when I'm looking around and I like see Vietnamese people, I'm like, oh, those people are Vietnamese. Like those people share a common experience that I have. So like, yeah, that's why I don't know if I fully agree with Han.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great perspective. When you guys go back to the demo tape in the submission in the beginning, how much Vietnamese-ness or Asian American-ness are you sprinkling in there? What, I mean, beyond that question, what did you think of when you were putting that audition tape together?
I think we were just being ourselves. I don't think we were trying to be like a Vietnamese character or anything. We were just trying to be ourselves and like, in all honesty, the audition tape is supposed to be 5 minutes, and we spent most of the time answering like the questions that like were necessary to get on the show in those 5 minutes, right? Like, why do you want to be on The Amazing Race? Why do you think you'll be good TV? How do you think you'll do? It didn't really feel like there was an opportunity to talk about our Vietnamese-ness. I think that was more reflected in like when we got interviewed by a casting producer and stuff, like that was when we like talked about like our own backgrounds. But in terms of like getting onto the show, it felt like we were really just talking about like why we wanted to do it and how we were going to do it and what we would look like if we were on it.
You know, I feel like, go ahead.
I was going to say like overarching though, I do feel like we knew what we were representing and what value we wanted to add in terms of like the Asian American perspective. Like, in our audition tape, like we did talk about like, for example, how like the differences in terms of like our parents making us do piano and like how I approach that task and how Holden approached that task and how like those clashing perspectives, like they both exist within the Asian American, like Vietnamese second gen child like perspective, but they're both very different. And we kind of wanted to show that. But like, yeah, I mean, a lot of the tape was just talking about why we wanted to do the show.
When you guys, I'm going to skip way, we'll go through the actual show later. I want to just skip ahead, way ahead. When you prepare for that audition tape and you're thinking about all the questions that the three questions that you just brought up, do you see the value of now being on TV and being, you know, sort of entertaining the world? And does that have any thing to do with like real life selling, marketing, advertising, pitching to the big wide world? Has anything to do with sports? And I know Holden, you're really into that. How does it affect the way you see the outside world looking at you now?
I don't know if I was trying to sell myself in any way. I was just playing a game. Like I was playing a game that many people watch, but people don't really get to play. Like, yeah, like to me, I was literally playing NBA basketball. In the sense that like you're doing this, like most people who are watching this don't fully understand ball. But like that, you're not worried about how people are watching you play the game. You're like, your goal is to win the game. Like your goal is to make more baskets than the other team, score more points than the other team, right? And so like I was not ever thinking about like how people were gonna perceive me. It was more like, how do I score more points than the other team? Like I would rather have spent, like if I spend my mental energy thinking about how other people would perceive me, I think we would have gone home a lot, like very soon. Like my focus was like, whoa, that's crazy. There's a camera in my face. But over time, you even get used to that. You're like part of the game is that there's always going to be a camera in your face. Like, just play.
I feel like something I realized, and like, I agree, like when we were on the show, I don't think we were thinking about how we were selling ourselves. We were just like, how can we get to the next leg? But like in the aftermath and like observing, I guess, the feedback that we got in terms of our story, and like what resonated and what didn't, I feel like something I realized is like diversity really sells. And I feel like odds are, like, I don't know, I don't think humans are that different from each other. Like, I don't know, we vary in terms of life experiences, but like chances are your story will resonate to an audience, you know? Like, there's parts and there's pieces, not maybe all of it, but like, for example, on the show, I talked a lot about like struggling with perfectionism and stuff like that. And like, there was this one comment that I got on my Substack that like really resonated with me. And this person commented that like, we represented Asians that didn't get the A, but still killed it. And I feel like that's something that like really embodied our story as a whole. And I feel like just like in general, when I thought about the entertainment industry and like what sold, I think like I personally had this perception that like perfection sold. And like, what does that look like? Like for me, for example, growing up in like a white neighborhood, and like that was what I was surrounded by, and like looking at the color of my skin, I used to think that like white sold, you know what I mean? Not necessarily like Asian sold. And so like, I guess this show like subconsciously kind of like solidified my brain and helped me realize the value in terms of just like diversity in general, and like having confidence and like owning your perspective, like what the power of that can do.
Oh, I love it. Love that answer. Holden, do you want to add to that?
I don't know if I have anything to add to that, in all honesty.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See lowes.com/rebates for details.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I like that answer, hon. Now, let's talk about, did you have to prep, and did you have to think about strategy and, you know, game theory, all of that prior to going in?
Yeah, I think in general, and this really just checks out in terms of like our relationship dynamic and like how we grew up, we kind of knew that it was going to be difficult and hard, and like we idealized what the game would be like. And so, granted, since we've never really worked together, we kind of just split up responsibilities and then like decided to have full trust in the partner for those abilities. But the thing about the race is like, you have to work together. Like, if you don't work together, it's not going to work. And that was the piece that we did not prepare. And I think that we were learning on the fly during our entire time on the race. And that was why watching us was so interesting, was because it was like, are they going to figure it out? You know?
Wow. So you're saying that that was the probably one of the biggest pieces to winning is understanding how to mechanically work together. It's so simple, right? It's such a simple thing. Like, had you thought about that, and like, but how would you ever know it if you've never gone through that?
I also think like even if you knew that, like nothing prepares you for how hard it is.
Okay, what made it hard, Holden? Like, I've heard this from both of you now. What made this thing so hard? Was it the strength?
You're watching it on TV, and then you're like, man,
I could do that.
I'm more competent than like half these guys.
Yeah.
And then you show up, and like everyone has said that, and everyone is right. Like, they are more competent than like everybody thinks. They're super competent. In fact, they're really good. They're probably better than you. You know, like they're probably better than we were. They were probably better. Like I'd say we were a bottom five, like bottom three team when we when we were watching
this, generous,
like
honestly.
In the first episode. Yeah, honestly.
Wow.
Like we were somewhere in the bottom three. Because everybody was so good. Everybody's so smart. Everybody knows what they're doing. So like there, your expectations have not been met. Second thing is like it's an immense amount of pressure. It's like
I feel like it's the equivalent of like mom and dad fleeing war pressure. You know, like run
I don't
through
know
dead
true.
Bodies. I felt
that's
that
valid
way.
If you feel that way. Yeah. Why not?
I think that like I do understand where like the life or death comes in, because like I was telling people that like how I describe it is like you're totally removed from the real outside world. You don't have your phone. You don't have contacts with like home. You don't have any of that. So like all you're thinking about is the race. So the race becomes your life. And like when you get eliminated, it's like the thought of that is like your life ends, because like you're not living that life anymore. So it's like it feels life or death in a sense. I don't know. And then you have to have sustained focus for 12 hours, like 8 to 12 hours of just nonstop focus. And then like things will obviously not go right. But you're already so exhausted for locking in for 6 hours that how do you do it for another 4 or 5? You know, like how do you do it for more time? Like how do you manage when things are not going right? Like, yeah. And then on top of that, you're like something crazy to think about is like if you take the Bulgaria leg, like people were talking about like, man, how did Nick and Mike not think about doing this or that or this or that? Because they were stuck with like trying to find the literal needle in the haystack. 6 hours before that, we had gotten off of a flight from Dubai, like a layover where we slept in the airport in Turkey and had flown 4 hours, landed at like 7 a.m. and then immediately started racing. Like, it's like things like that where it's like, in the moment, you don't think it really taxes your body, but everything taxes your body. Like nothing doesn't come without a cost. So yeah, how I think about it is like, yeah, you're just always on, you're always focused. It's like playing a 5-hour tennis match. Like odds are whoever wins that match like was just more mentally focused, more mentally sharp, and just able to sustain their focus for a longer period of time.
I feel like like what I tell people is you're sleep deprived, you're starved, you have to focus for 12 hours. And on top of that, you're working with a partner that you've never worked with before. And like all you've known your entire life is arguing, which is just the fact of the matter. And like now under this extreme pressure where every single decision feels like it's life or death, like to run right, to run left, to decide A, to decide B, like you have to do this all while working with someone that like you've never worked with before. So it's just the hardest thing I've ever done.
Do you think a lot of this is really about luck, turning left, turning right? Like those decisions are flip of a coin. Some of the teams just happen to be more lucky than you, and the winner just is the luckiest.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, wow.
I think luck plays a big part, and luck is a huge determiner in the level of stress, but you also make your own luck.
Like we were lucky that we got the only non-elimination leg in like 5 years. That was luck. But like, I know it's crazy, but like all of the other decisions of escaping elimination, like there were so many conversations that were happening behind closed doors of strategies of like trying to learn how to work together. Like we had our game plan solidified. It was pretty simple, but it got us pretty far to a certain point. And like, we never banked on luck, but when luck came our way, we seized it.
Okay. I have two questions. If you guys were to do this for season 38, 39, could you win it? Number one, that's the first question. Like, if you get another shot at the show, can you win it? The other thing is, what do you think is the most important skill set or strength that you need to work on to win a show like this?
I think something that really played to our strengths that we had that saved us was adaptability. Like knowing how to think on our feet, not thinking more than one task ahead. Because, like, I think that's what kills people is, like, the second they think three steps ahead, they're screwed. Also, I am echoing a little bit. I don't know. No, we should stop for that. What was I saying? All right. So I think something that we had that saved us was adaptability. And I feel like this comes from, like, our parents straight up. Like, they came to America with nothing. They learned how to make it work. They worked with what they had, and then they scraped their way to, like, the American dream. And I feel like something for us, like, something that we would talk about is, like, we would be in the hotel room after, like, a leg, really feeling dejected, and we were like, if mom and dad freaking, like, made it through war, like, we can we can find a way to make it to, like, leg three or, like, leg four.
So
I think that that's something that's, like, really, really important, because the second you think three steps ahead, like, you're done. Like, your brain goes into overdrive, and then your decision making just completely goes out the window, and then you're done. In terms of, like, to win, I believe that we could win. I really do. But, like, we personally have so much to work on in our relationship to get there. Like, that's just the matter of the fact. We made it, like, we improved our relationship a lot on the race, but, like, there is so much work that we have to do, and, like, that takes time. That takes, I think, like, alignment. And I'm not saying that we could never get there, but, like, that's just, like, the gap that exists.
Holden?
Yeah, I think we could win. Like, in fact, I, like, am, like, pretty confident that we could. Like, I was pretty confident that we could win last, like, when, like, season 37. Yeah, I think Han said everything. I also think that something worth mentioning is, like, being the youngest team is not easy. Like, knowing, like, not knowing, but I'd say, like, not having as much life experience does not help you at all. Like in terms of pressure management, in terms of adaptability, like, I think our adaptability was really good. I mean, like, that was probably our best strength. And, like, but I think that, like, in terms of, like risk management, in terms of, like, teammate communication, like, being young, like, being 21 and then being put in a really, really high pressure situation, like, there's so much to learn from that experience alone, let alone, like, probably what, like, the next, like, if I were to do it again, I'd like to wait a little bit longer than, like, season 38 or season 39.
Yeah.
But I, yeah, I mean, like, also just single-handedly knowing what to train for and knowing what to expect, that eliminates a huge hurdle. Like, a huge hurdle. Like, I think that, yeah, like, yeah, like, I think that being young and, like, having the expectation of what to expect is always helpful. And that's why I think that, like, we definitely could if we had another chance. But I think for now, like, until that day comes and until, like, I'm told that it's going to happen, I got to work with what I have. And so I got to work on all the things that, like, Han was talking about. Like, I'm not really concerned about, like, doing another season of the race.
What are some of the most difficult moments during that race?
I wonder if we have the same ones. Hold on, I have no idea.
Oh,
do you want to go first?
Cool.
Sure. Do I want to go first?
Yeah.
Or do you?
You can go.
Like, maybe my, like, opinion differs from Han in this way. Like, doing it, while I was doing it, I was like, man, like, I don't know if this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I honestly don't know what the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is. Because, like, whenever I do things that are hard, I'm like, okay, when I finish this, it'll feel easier. But then when I'm done with it, I'm like, damn, I just finished that. Like, I think probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life was, like, the intro CS class at Stanford. Because, like, I just felt, like, so unhappy the whole time I was doing it.
But don't they say the hardest thing you've ever done is the hardest thing you've ever done, right? It's like, how do we know what the hardest thing we've ever done is?
Exactly. Like, I don't know what the hardest thing I've ever done is. I think that, like, in terms of difficult, like, I don't know if there were just difficult moments, but it just, like, there were moments that just sucked.
Yeah, most painful. I want to hear the most painful moment.
Like, getting in a car accident on the finale sucks.
Interesting.
Like, that just sucks. That's, like, all the momentum that is built up is just gone.
That sounds painful.
That just sucks. That's just, like, damn. Like, you're playing all of this, and then all of a sudden, like, that's, yeah. And then you're, like, shit, man. Like all momentum we had has to come to a halt. And, like, it's not, like, and now we have to figure out a completely different situation that affects the game, but, like, also, like, it's probably, yeah. Like, that just sucked.
You can make an argument for life too. I mean, you see there's people in their 60s and 70s who work their ass off to, like, build whatever savings they got, and then they get sick with something and their whole savings is wiped out, start from, you know, square one. And yeah, you know, this is metaphorical of real life, you know, if you think about it.
And yeah, absolutely,
it prepares you for real life one day, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like, staring down the barrel of elimination sucks. Being an hour and a half behind, like, an hour behind all the other teams to start the leg, and, like that, yeah, that's a pretty, like, yeah, that's a pretty terrible feeling. Like, I never felt, like, here's the thing, is, like, I never felt like the challenges themselves were the most difficult things ever. And it's not because they weren't hard. It's because you yourself are in total control of whether or not you get to leave or not.
Right.
Like, if you figure out how to do, like, if you figure out how to tie cheese, you get to leave. You know, if you figure out how to put on the sumo wrestling garb, you get to leave. But, like, I think, so, like, I think that, like, things that are totally within your control, you, yeah, I don't think that those were the most difficult things, because that just meant that, like, okay, lock the fuck in, trust yourself, and let's get through this, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But I think that, like, in terms of, like, things that we couldn't control, car accident, like, you could make the argument that we could control being an hour behind everybody else, but when you're starting the leg, you can't really control that, right? Like, that just sucked. I think those were, like, the hardest things. It was things that you can't control, and you're like, oh. But then again, you can't feel sorry for yourself. You can just do what you can and, like, focus on what you can, and then do each of those tasks with, like, the intention as if you can control it. And then over time, you can make your own luck that way.
Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm just, like, realizing how important blood is to me. Like, when I reflect on why I did the race in the first place, because I was already traveling and doing my own big grand solo adventure, and, like, the travel aspect was something that, like, wasn't the piece that sold me in terms of, like, why I wanted to do this. Like, genuinely, the reason why I wanted to do this was because I wanted to spend time with Holden and I wanted to better our relationship. And I feel like when I think about the most difficult moments, like, I think during the race, we had both, like, the highest of highs together and the lowest of lows together. Like, highest of highs in terms of, like, holy crap, we accomplished that. And, like, it, like, I'd say, like, the pinnacle of that was when we made it to the top three, because we genuinely did not know if, like, we had what it took to work together to get there. But I think, like, there's some, you know, arguments that were shown off camera where, like, I myself questioned whether or not, like, I guess the work that I felt like I was putting in towards, like growing the relationship and making it better and, like, wondering if it was getting better, like, I feel like those were the moments that were the most difficult to me, like, accompanied with the fact that I don't have my mom to be a sounding board to talk about this with. I have literally just my journal, my brother, and, like, I don't know, 3 hours until we have to be in panic mode again. You know what I mean? So I feel like those are, like, the most difficult moments, I think, too. And, like Holden mentioned, like, there was, you know, we had, like, before that leg, when we spent all day in the Bulgarian sun trying to find a needle in the haystack and getting U-turned and, like, carrying a bunch of wood, like, we had, like, a pretty big argument in the airport. And, like, I'll take accountability. Part of it was my fault, you know? But, like, I don't know. I would say like that was like the most difficult part for me.
Hmm. How do you think this experience is going to change your lives in the future?
I think we've kind of said like the race really did show us what we're capable of when we put our heads together. Like we weren't exaggerating. We didn't just say that for the camera. Like that was true. Like it's incredible that we got second out of like 14 teams and everyone was so freaking good of starting from zero. That is incredible, you know? And so I think like knowing that we have the confidence of like where we could be in the back of our minds. But I also think that like the race also brought out aspects of a relationship that like need work. And like, I think we have an idea of like what that is. And so like, it's like, you know, double knife sword. There's like the good and there's like the bad.
Yeah. But...
Holden.
I have no idea. I mean, like, I think beyond what Han said, at least, like, yeah, I mean, like, objectively, it is just a reality TV show. So, like, I don't know. Unless I get my own Kardashian show, I don't know what, like, with her, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I physically get out of it. I think, like, beyond what Han said, like, we just have things that we need to work on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also don't really think it is like a useful exercise, at least for me, to like daydream and imagine what I will get like 5 years from now from this experience. I think that like we have actionable items, like I'm going to focus on those.
Yep. That's fair enough. Lastly, does this move the needle in your minds for Asian representation?
I think it moves the needle as much as Vietnamese people watch it. Like, I don't think that our experience alone is enough to change, like, an entire cultural perception of what risk is. Nor is it enough to change an entire cultural perception of what, like, Vietnamese people are like. I think that in order for it to have an actual impact, and honestly for us to do the race again, like Vietnamese people have to watch it and Vietnamese people have to decide what they want out of it or what they decide out of it. Like they have the active choice of like watching this and then seeing like, hey, at least young ones do, like, hey, I have enough like time in my life that I can take a big risk. I can take time off of school. I can take time off of work and I can go like go for it. Right. But I think that's all it is. It's like, it's never like, I don't think we're the ones to break the glass ceiling. I think we've made our mark on it. And we'll continue to make our mark on it. Like this is like, I was telling someone like my ins and outs at for my birthday the other day, like in is like, continuing to try new things. Out is the amazing race in the sense that like that's not what I want to be thinking about every single day. So like that's our goal, is to still break the glass ceiling, but I don't think that's what's going to break the glass ceiling. I think what actually breaks the glass ceiling is if we motivate more Vietnamese people to like take a risk and really put themselves out there and like do things that are scary.
At your age, do you really think that there's a glass ceiling or a bamboo ceiling?
Like, in what way?
Career, money, advancement, all of it. Do you look into the environment, all the life that you've lived so far in America?
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a ceiling for you?
For me or for, like, everybody else?
Everybody Asian American.
I think there is some degree of a ceiling. I think there is a ceiling. I think that, like, maybe not in the sense that, like, other historically marginalized groups in America have. But I think that there is like a certain degree of difficulty that is distinct to the Asian American experience that still persists. But again, I don't know if my mindset is conducive to like feeling that I have to conform to that ceiling, right? Like someone has to break past it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, literally someone has to. So, like, why can't it be me
or her? Absolutely.
Or you?
That's what I want
to
hear.
Whoever's listening to this, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that, yeah, there definitely is. But I don't know, like, to what degree I let it affect me. Like, I know it exists, but I don't let it define me.
Han?
Yeah. I feel like something that I've really been thinking about in the past month is, like, I think especially coming to, like, our parents coming from Vietnam and, like, giving us this opportunity, like, my entire life I've always thought very big. Like, I've always thought, like, you know, if I'm going to make an impact, like, it's got to be earth-shattering. Like, for example, I'm the one that's curing the lack of Asian diversity on, like, your TV screen. You know what I mean? It's such a huge, massive problem that, like, you know, it's not going to take, like, Holden or me to fix that problem. But I think that's something that I've really been thinking about over the past month is, like, and this is something that we did on the race and what accounted to our success on the race is just, like, taking it one step at a time, like, taking it one task at a time, taking it one leg at a time. Until you reach that final leg, then you think about, like, shattering, you know, the glass ceiling that Holden was talking about. But I feel like there's been, like, comments that I've read through where people have talked about, like, how our story has resonated with them. Like, when we went to the Giants game and we did an appearance, like, there was, like, a mother, and she wasn't even Asian. She came to us and, like, started crying and was like, I just, like, hope that my kids can, like, learn how to work together, like the way that I saw you two work together on The Amazing Race. And so it's, like, I think that, like, if we're thinking about the grand, did we make a big impact in terms of, like, Asian Americans in the entertainment industry, I feel like it's more so, like Holden said, we left our mark, but, like, there's so much more work to be done. And, like, I don't see it as, like, a one and done situation. It's kind of like a slow moving journey that, like, we all need to work towards. And, like, part of that is, like, getting more Vietnamese people, for example, to watch The Amazing Race when we were on it and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think that just makes it feel less daunting when I frame it that way.
I really enjoyed having two young, articulate Vietnamese Americans on the show today. I appreciate you both for reaching out, and this turned out incredibly beautiful for me as somebody who is always looking to the youth of the Vietnamese American diaspora to hear what they're thinking about their own representation and how they feel about themselves. And, you know, this sort of projects back to Vietnam. A lot of young people watch it in Vietnam as well to get a sense of who we are. And I think I look forward to what you both accomplish in the far future and the near future. And if you both have another show that you're on or whatever project, I would love to have you both back on to talk about your future endeavors. And if it's just one of you, it's fine. And if it's both of you teamed up, that's cool too. I mean, because we want to see this sort of ongoing, these fibers of our community keep reaching new heights. And so I'm very interested in that.
Thank you, Kenneth. I also do want to plug my Substack because that is something that I am trying to be consistent about. And, like, I think something that just, like, this whole journey has taught me is, like, just, like, having the confidence to chase the creative endeavors, like, if you want to. And that's mine right now. So check out my Substack. It's at Han Bi Nguyen.
H-A-N-B-N-G-U-Y-E-N, correct?
Yes. And I talk about just, like, life and, like, through the lens of, like, eldest daughter, second gen. So first, yeah, second gen.
Very cool. Holden, any closing shameless plugs?
Oh, no, you can follow me on Instagram so I can get verified. That would be pretty cool.
Say again?
You can follow me on Instagram so I can get verified at hole, H-O-L-E dot D-E-N. Otherwise, I don't know. Nothing to plug for myself. Just things I'm working on in silence, like a Prius.
Thank you both for coming on today.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Thank you for having us, Kenneth.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.